What's going on, guys? This is Chris Albert, and this is the Warrior Soul Podcast, episode number 67. And in all these episodes I've done, I've interviewed a lot of different people. I've had athletes on here. I've had celebrities. I've had fellow veterans on. And I have to say that while I loved each and every one of my guests, this interview has to be my favorite so far. And today's guest is the author of a book called Craig and Fred, A Marine, A Stray Dog, and How They Rescued Each Other. And this book hit me really, really hard. And the reason is because the story is told in a way. It's not just about a guy and his dog, but it's about a guy who joins the Marine Corps, ends up going to one of the harshest environments in Afghanistan, and amidst all of the chaos and the craziness that's going on, he sees a floppy little dog. And that dog befriends him, and it befriends his unit, and basically becomes a part of their family. But throughout the story, you kind of gain these lessons and these lessons about relationships and about positivity and about basically, you know, going after what you really want in this life and being persistent in getting it. And there's so much more here too. I mean, it goes not just into their life together in Afghanistan, but also their lives as civilians, because Craig eventually got Fred the dog out of Afghanistan. Despite great risk to both him and Fred, got him shipped home to the United States, and today they're traveling the country together. And the story also goes quite a bit into Craig's own transition from the Marine Corps to civilian life, into college, and some of the demons he faced that Fred helped him get through. And it also has a lot of lessons here for veterans. If you're going through something right now, if you are dealing with anything, you know, and not just if you're a veteran, if you're anybody, you can't read this book without coming away with a more positive outlook about life and the blessings that can be there for you if you're persistent, if you're patient, and if you really, really look for the beauty in life. Because I think one of the great lessons from this episode, from this interview, is that, yeah, there's a lot of ugly, awful things in life. There's a lot of evil people out there in the world. There's also a whole lot of good. A whole lot of good and a whole lot of beauty. And so it was my pleasure to interview my Marine brother, Craig Grassi, and also to bring on Fred the Afghan, his dog. And we got some amazing, amazing lessons for you guys. And I'm going to stop yapping my gums in a second. But first, I got to give you a note from our sponsors. F-Bomb Nutrition, absolutely amazing company run by absolutely amazing people. They make these portable packets of delicious, healthy fats. And they've got packets of avocado oil, coconut oil, MCT oil. And that's important because if you're doing a ketogenic diet or a paleo diet, it's not always easy to get fat, right? If you're using fat as fuel, it's not easy to get it at a restaurant, if you're on the go, if you're at a job, or if you're in the military and you're out in the field, you know, try getting coconut oil out in the field. It's absolutely crazy. But F-Bomb, they make these amazing portable packets that allow you to get it anywhere, and you can carry them around with you. And I love their oils, but my favorite product are their fuel packets. And one of them is macadamia nut butter mixed with coconut oil. And it tastes absolutely amazing. It tastes like a crushed up macadamia nut cookie, crushed up into a paste. And I put it in all my shakes, and sometimes I'll just eat it straight out of the packet. But it's got no sugar in it. It tastes absolutely awesome. You should definitely check them out. They're at www.dropanfbomb.com. And for listening to this show, you get 20% off of your first order if you use the code WarriorSoul at checkout. So that's at www.dropanfbomb.com and use the code WarriorSoul to get 20% off of your first order. With that, let's get into this episode with Craig Grassi and Fred the Afghan, the authors of Craig and Fred, A Marine, A Stray Dog, and How They Rescued Each Other.
This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And you need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Warrior Soul Podcast. This is Chris Albert. And today I have to say that, you know, I've had a lot of guests on this podcast. I've interviewed a lot of authors, a lot of celebrities, a lot of different types of personalities. I've been more excited about this podcast than I have about any other. I'm joined today by Craig Grassi, a fellow U.S. Marine, an author of the book Craig and Fred. And Fred's there too. He's sleeping on the ground over there. But if you haven't heard of this book details Craig's journey through Afghanistan, his journey before joining the Marine Corps, and his journey after the Marine Corps, and how he connected with a little dog in the middle of nowhere in the Sanjan province in Afghanistan. And they basically found each other, saved each other, and they're still together today, traveling and having a ball. And Craig, I want to welcome you to the podcast. I know you're on your book tour right now there with Fred, and you guys are super busy, but how's everything going?
Oh, it's going great, man. It's the absolute best kind of busy we could ever have asked for. You know, we're traveling now, and we've kind of been traveling off and on for the last couple of years. But it was always kind of on our own dime and on our own, initiative. And now we have, you know, just a very intact schedule with really great events. And we have the book, you know, and we have this thing that we can hand to people and say, you know, take this and take your own, you know, like take your own lessons from it and stuff like that. And that's just really exciting and it means a lot to me.
Yeah. If you guys haven't checked out this book, it's right here. It's called Craig and Fred, and you can see what Fred looks like there. He's sitting on Craig's shoulders. If you can, I just kind of describe your first meeting with Fred, because I want people to really read this book, because I think that this book could really benefit so many people if they go through it and actually read it from start to finish. But if you can, just describe your first meeting with Fred and why you fell in love with him.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, there were no established FOBs or any kind of combat outposts up in the northern Sangin Valley near the Green Zone. And I was attached to recon, and we went in and we set up kind of overnight. We set up a really hasty position in this compound, and then essentially filled sandbags and dug a couple murder holes. Was the best we could do. And all the analysts and everybody was telling us before we punched into Sangin that, you know, we were going to be in the fight of our lives, and that the Taliban there were just a totally different enemy. And they were right. I mean, from day one, they came at us with much more coordinated efforts and just bigger everything in terms of their caliber of weapons and the numbers that we saw were unlike anywhere else. And so it was probably like a good week of just kind of standing, you know, our ground and fighting them off. every day. And it was in between engagements and in between stuff like, you know, like mortar attacks and stuff like that, that I would spot Fred kind of bebopping around this compound that we had taken, you know, we had kind of commandeered. And he was all by himself, which to me was one of the first things I noticed about him, you know, because most of the times the dogs, they only really came out at night and they were, you know, just usually in little packs. And he was during the day. He was always out during the day. And he kind of seemed like he carried himself, like, despite his runty size, you know, he was really confident, you know, and I kind of noticed that pretty quickly too. And so it was, you know, it was probably after things kind of died down a little bit. Maybe like day six or seven, I finally spotted him. He had a little nest, like this little clump of bushes he was in. And at first moment I walked over to him, as I got kind of close to him, you know, I realized this might not be a good idea. I mean, he was covered in bugs and he was hot and hungry and he was really dirty. But as I got a couple feet from him, I noticed he was doing something, and to this day, it has impacted me, and it's a big part of his story. And I'll kind of leave the first encounter story at that. But he was wagging his tail, essentially, and that to me was such a simple thing for him to do, but to me it said everything. And to me, it was this dog has absolutely nothing to wag his tail about, and he's no reason to trust a person at all, you know, but here he is, he's doing it, and he wants to reach out, and he's, to me, I call it stubborn positivity now. That's Fred, you know. And so that was our first encounter, and it was just one little thing after another that kind of just really made him grow in my heart and the rest of the guys I was with.
And if you guys get a chance to go check out Craig and Fred's Instagram, Fred the Afghan, if you see what this dog looks like, I mean, yeah. it looks like almost like a lab, on legs that are about like half as long as they should be. And,
right.
So I imagine that was like a really interesting sight because, I served in Iraq, but from what you wrote, I saw that most of the dogs there were like, looked like wolves mixed with hyenas or something like that.
Right. Yeah. This
little guy comes up and he's
friendly. Yeah, I mean, it was you know, he has big dog features. His head, his neck, and his body, and he has a really big chest. Mm-hmm. And he kind of knows that. Like, he walks around with his chest out all the time. But yeah, he just got hip to stem. Like, it wasn't slowing down at all. And my dad says he's two dogs long and one dog tall. That's kind of a little phrase that we say about him. But yeah, I mean, he was different, you know, and much more approachable. I mean, there was a rule for us, you know, like, don't, and for all troops, you know, like, don't approach stray animals. And I didn't think it was a bad rule, and I didn't have a problem following it until I saw Freddy.
and you know, going off of that rule, you know, dogs that came in contact with U.S. service members in Afghanistan were largely euthanized or they were under the threat of euthanization. And that's a theme throughout your book, kind of going through this struggle. Like, I'm here, I'm serving in a war, and we have a mission on our minds, but you know, this dog is really important, not only to you, but to your unit. And he became really important to your unit. How did that come about? I mean, it seems like he almost drew you guys together and almost kind of made you guys focus on him as kind of like a family member.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it was everything from just like coming up to a guy like that in his bug net at night and like cuddling with him, you know, when we started going out at night to really try to get in contact with some of the villagers who were caught in the middle. Fred came on patrols with us, and this is recon. Like, they like to be quiet, you know, and they value that. And if you can't keep up, you know, you can't come. And Fred kept up, and Fred kept his mouth shut. And even when in instances when a dog, you would expect a dog to bark, you know, and when a pack of dogs would kind of be following us and barking at us, Fred never barked back, and Fred never made a sound. And that kind of, you know, know, he's with us, you know, and lots of everything from, you know, big stuff like that to just little stuff like just him being himself and him clearly kind of just standing out in contrast to the environment that he was in. You know, it was almost like he wandered off of someone's front porch and got lost, you know, like really, really lost. I was asking villagers kind of all the time, like, whose dog is this? You know, whose dog is this? Because he was so chill and so great. And I was told repeatedly, you know, like, no, he's not one's dog. He's a stray. And no, they would laugh, like the Afghans would laugh at us that we loved him so much because he wasn't of any value, you know, if he wasn't big.
Yeah, they have a very different mentality toward dogs and animals than we do. It seems like that was another kind of theme there where, you know, you really wanted to get him out of there because you didn't know what his life was going to be like afterwards or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was like he was waiting for us because not to downplay anybody that's ever got a dog back from overseas, but the stories I've heard and the friends that I've known that have pulled it off, they were on a FOB or they were on a base and like that for most of their deployment, and they had kind of the resources and the time to kind of dedicate to that dog, and the dog itself was brought up kind of around that environment of that base and was, you know, hand fed and kind of, you know, stuff like that. With Fred, we showed up on him. You know, he had existed in the wilds of Sangin for probably, I estimate, around 8 to 9 months of his life. So he was still a puppy, but he was around long enough to have kind of become, you know, mean like all the other dogs we saw. And so I think we all felt, you know, responsible for him. You know, like because it was the coincidence was just too incredible. You know, that the compound we happened to take, you know, for that operation, you know, for this little dog happened to be in it, you know, and it was, you know, he really just kind of consistently demonstrated his, you know, his awesomeness and his value. And, you know, and anybody that has a dog, you have a dog, you know, like when you're petting your dog, when you're hanging out with your dog, that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. And so, it doesn't matter if you're in your bedroom or if you're on a battlefield in Afghanistan, like, and he did Fred, if nothing else, he gave us that in brief moments, you know, in the field, when you were giving Fred a little scratch or you're playing tug of war with him or whatever, that's what you were doing. And it was like your blood pressure dropped and it was so awesome. And so, yeah, we all just wanted to see him get out of there.
That's so amazing. And you know, there's a few scenes from the book that really, really kind of just get at me. I told you before this, I had to have my girlfriend actually read the book before I did because I still have like flashbacks from watching Old Yeller when I was a kid.
Yeah, dude. Right. Yeah.
And the one scene that you know, and again, I don't want to ruin the book for people, but getting onto the helicopter, your heart had to be in your throat at that moment when you finally were going to bring him on and that you were going to take this upon yourself. What was going through your head?
Oh, man, everything from like, what are you thinking? You know, like this is insane. You know, like I really just hope I can get him in the bag and just get him on the back of the helicopter. But for me, I wanted it to be like exhaustingly clear that it was what I was supposed to do. I wanted it to really, I put it on Fred. I wanted it to be his call and his choice to take this risk because beyond getting him out of the field and back to Leatherneck, I didn't really have much, if any, of a plan from there. And I knew was we were only going to go back to Leatherneck for 2 weeks to rest up. And then we were heading right back out into Sangin. And so I was like, man, like I didn't know what I was going to do from there or how I was going to get him home. But I told Fred, I kind of pulled Fred aside before the helicopters came to pick us up. And I was like, look, man, if you're not scared off by all the noise and craziness that happens when a helicopter comes down and you follow us, you know, like I'll do my part, you know, and if you ignore the, you know, all that stuff and, you know, and I honestly thought he would be halfway to Pakistan by the time the thing hit the ground, because, you know, what, who, how do you expect a stray dog to follow you to the back of a helicopter? You know, like they have to train the working dogs to do stuff like that, you know? And, but yeah, that is that scene. When I read it, it still gets me. My anxiety goes through my throat, you know, and I almost like look at myself like, what were you thinking, man? Like that was insane, you know? And so, yeah, I don't want to give too much away. Cause yeah, that is a really powerful scene. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you brought it up. But, yeah, that was a big moment in just in my life in general. Now looking back at it.
Yeah. Like I said, it's absolutely amazing. And like, you guys definitely got to get this book. I mean, I've read a lot of books in my life. This one has had a major, major impact on me. And I think it's
a
major impact on any person who reads it, but let alone, veterans. I mean, like,
yeah,
veterans in general need to hear this message and need to learn the lessons from this. And I think one of the biggest lessons from it is that if you have positivity in your heart and you want something to happen, you can make it happen. You can bring it together. And I think that's a lesson both from Fred and from yourself.
Thankfully,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah. That means a lot. I mean, cause I learned from Fred, you know, and for me getting out and transitioning was rough, you know, and I almost didn't really realize I was going through a rough spot at the time because I had Fred, and because whenever I felt frustrated or down, you know, like I would just look at him, you know, and to me, he was a reminder of something awesome that I did. He was, you know, just very tangible, you know, and it was like, we had this bond and we had done this thing together, and when it could have gone wrong 100 different ways, you know, we made it happen, you know, together. And so he kind of just kept me positive, you know, and it kept me driven to just never really, I guess never really compromising in terms of my happiness and my contentness. Yeah.
And, you know, there's a few different storylines in the book, and, a big part of the book is, I believe it's your friend, Josh, forgive me if I get the right
name. Yeah, it's Josh. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in part of the book is you're traveling around the country with him and Fred.
Yeah.
And Josh is an amputee. He served in the US Army. One of the things that I got from it is when you're encountering people look at Josh and they see, okay, wounded veteran and you have that. And then, you know, you coming back, you know, I know you suffered a traumatic brain injury, you know, people don't see that.
They don't
see that at all. And it's hard to strike up a conversation. It's hard to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how Fred helped you with that? You know, having him here in the States and having him on that trip.
Yeah. I mean, it's Fred's story, you know, and it became, you know, just going, living in DC and going to the different dog parks and with Fred and just striking up conversations with people about Fred. Cause everywhere he goes, people are like, what kind of dog is that? And he's just so looking, you know, and he hears corgi all the time. And I think that gets on both of our nerves cause he's not a corgi, but it was another one of the ways that he really impacted my life was because it reconnected me with my love of storytelling. And it's one of the first things I think I ever realized I was good at as a kid. Mm-hmm. was like sitting around the dinner table with my family or going to a sleepover with my friends when I was like a little kid and just like telling a story, you know? And so when I would go to the dog park and somebody would ask about Fred, I would just, they had no idea what they're signing up for, but I would just kick off on this crazy story about how I found him and how I got him home. And the next thing I knew, you know, I was talking to total strangers about, you know, not just about Fred, but about Afghanistan and about my experiences there and about my friends that I lost, you know, and the friends that I served with that were just incredible guys. So I think it was never my plan, you know, it was never like my intention to go to the dog park and talk to people about about that stuff. You know, I just wanted to see Fred chase a squirrel. But next thing I knew, you know, it was just really another way that, you know, it's proof to me that, you know, his presence in my life isn't an accident, you know, and this is a story that we were supposed to share. So it's really just exciting to do it on a big level like this with the book.
At what point did you decide that you were gonna write a book? Like what came upon you that said, I got to sit down, I got to get this out?
Yeah. A couple of things. I mean, I think the biggest obstacle for me was, convincing myself that my story was worth it. That, like, I think a natural thing that veterans have is, you know, it's just like, you're not special, you know? And like, yeah, like there's 100 dogs people brought home from Afghanistan or Iraq. Like what's so great about Fred's story, you know? And just kind of getting over like that idea that I'm not good, like that it's not good enough, or that I'm not worthy of this, you know, opportunity. And that, I think that was probably the biggest thing I had to overcome. And then once I kind of made peace with that, I started to write. And the more I wrote, I took Fred on a camping trip, and we did about 4 nights just like on the Appalachian Trail. And I brought a legal pad, and I would just sit by a little fire at night and just write. And the more I wrote, man, the better it felt. And it was like, at first I was like, whoa, like it just feels good. I don't know if the writing is any good. I don't know if anybody's going to give a crap about this, but it just felt great. I filled that legal pad in just a week. And then I ended up taking a writing course, just a weekend kind of crash course on not creative writing, but just on writing with the Veterans Writing Project, which is an awesome nonprofit based out of DC, but they do stuff all over the country. And it's all free to vets, and they just give you as much as they can, kind of a fire hose situation, in terms of just what it's like to write and why it's important for us to write. And after that weekend, I was like, whoa, like this, you know, I really want to do this. And then I went on the road trip with Josh that summer, and that to me was a test. And it was almost like kind of like asking Fred to follow me to the helicopter, you know, like, you know, and if I can live this story and like tell it from everywhere, from Chattanooga, Tennessee to Bend, Oregon and back, and it feels good and it feels right, then when I graduate the following year from Georgetown, like, then this is what I want to do. And every mile we put on that road that summer, and every time I told the story, it was just proof to me, and it just became stronger in my heart that, you know, that this was what I wanted to do. And it was, again, kind of, I'm realizing as I'm telling you, you know, like, it was kind of like, once Fred followed me to the helicopter, I was like, okay, like, what, how do I get him home now? And then it was same thing. Like, once I figured out, you know, inside myself that I wanted to share this story, then I had to figure out how the heck I was going to pull it off, you know, and how I was going to get a book deal. And, you know, and it was, to me, it didn't have to be, you know, this big grand scale. And I could have never imagined that, you know, HarperCollins would pick us up, and that we would have this incredible, all these resources that we have now. To me, it was just about getting it out. And I was ready to self-publish. I was ready to do whatever it took to just have it and be able to, you know, say to people, read my book, you know, and read about my friends. So it wasn't an easy journey. And this time last year, I was really lost and really frustrated. I was working retail. You know, I took a job that let me bring Fred into the store, because I felt like that was, you know, I wasn't going to sell people socks or ties. Like, I was selling people Fred, you know, and I never knew who was going to walk through the door. So, you know, that was where I was. And it was just a matter of just kind of staying persistent with it and really just, never letting go of the idea.
That's, that's so interesting to me, because, you know, one, the writing was like therapy to you and
yeah,
the way of getting things out, which in a lot of ways, that's kind of why I do podcasts and how I started doing podcasts and YouTube and things like that.
But right, yeah,
what's even more interesting to me here is kind of this process you have where you're setting up these little incremental challenges for yourself. And if you meet the test, then you're going to go full on in with it, and you're going to go all the way. And I think that's a really cool way of going about things that a lot of people from home could learn from, because setting up these tests, and they're things that are doable, but they require effort. They're a little bit of a challenge, a little bit of a stretch for you. And stretch yourself a little bit, then you grab hold onto it. And if it's a fit, you go for it. That's awesome.
Yeah, because I think I've made enough mistakes and I've gone down the wrong path enough to know when I'm on it. And setting up those tests, you know, if it doesn't work out, you know, or even if it does and it still doesn't really feel right, you can, you know, you haven't, you know, overcommitted yourself to something. I guess it was kind of an unconscious thing, but it is a method. And a big crossroads was I graduated from school and I got a job offer to go back into the Intel world, and I knew if I went back in to this specifically this job that I would blink and I would be, you know, in my 60s, and it was just going to be that kind of environment because it was kind of the job I'd always wanted. And I had my clearance had lapsed while I was back at school. And so I had an 8 to 9 month, you know, window for, you know, where they're saying, like, you know, you can't start for at least 9 months, 8 to 9 months. And I was like, okay, like, I guess I got 8 to 9 months to get this book off the ground if it's going to go anywhere, you know. And that was when I really, you know, put the hammer down on trying to just get the story out there. It was going to go one way or the other. I was going to go back to the government and go back into the Intel world, or I was gonna, you know, just go down this book path and see how far it took me. So here we are.
the book path is uncomfortable. I mean, by no means were no certainties, and you know, even right now, you know, your book's out, everything looks awesome, but there's still no certainties. But you look like you're having a freaking ball. I mean, you're that life experience and you look so happy right now. And I think that's
right? Yeah, it is, you know, I feel as content as I did when I was, hucking around Sangin with Recon, you know, with a notebook in my pocket and just talking to villagers all night, you know, like that to me was, you know, my sweet spot in terms of just my Marine Corps career and just what I joined to do in the first place. And it's been a long road since then to try and figure out exactly what the heck I'm supposed to do now after the Marines. And I mean, I got out in 2011, right when I got home. But this is the best I've felt since those days. And it really is just clear to me that, you know, everybody we talk to, you know, we're coming in their lives for a reason, you know, and people are ready to hear this story. And it runs the gamut. You know, I'm so proud to share this for my fellow veterans and for anyone that's transitioning, or not. But also just for the random civilian or any person that just needs a story about life and about, you know, just finding your path. Cause I've been looking for a long time, but, you know, I'm proud to say that, at least for now, you know, this is right where I'm supposed to be. So yeah, it feels good.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing to mention there too is, you know, like you said, you had jobs waiting for you in the intelligence world. You graduated from what for all intents and purposes is one of the most elite institutions in the country.
Crazy.
And you know, you lived a great life, and it's not like, you know, it's not like you were one of these kids who grew up in New England who went to a prep school or anything like that. You came out of the Marine Corps, you served as an enlisted person, went into college, and then came out. But what's cool about that is that all these things that these kids who did grow up in the prep schools, who did go to the Ivy League colleges, who had what you would call like the standard grooming for what you see in government in Washington D.C., they would sit there in that job and they'd wait, you know, and you're out here living. And I think that's the
cool. Yeah, man, it's awesome. It was just really, I think, just about not settling and really holding out and understanding, you know, that I didn't have to settle, you know, and I could wait for the, not really wait, but really work for this, you know, and for the opportunities and and where they, when they weren't there, just make them for yourself, you know? I feel very lucky, but I also know that, that it took a lot of persistence but I have been just, the people in my life are incredible. Everybody that's been involved in the book, everybody at HarperCollins and has really matched my enthusiasm, and that's all I could ask for. It's great, man. I'm really excited to see where it takes us from here.
And it's about understanding what you want as a person, I think,
too. Yeah.
Rather than doing what everybody else wants, or wants you to do.
Right.
I just reading from the book, I know you were in some situations where you almost got yourself into a life situation that you completely didn't want to be in, and you recognize that. How can the guys at home, how can you recognize one of these situations where, you know, you feel like, or you're about to step into a situation where you know you're not going to be happy, but everybody around you is pressuring you to do it?
Yeah, it's tough. It's so tough. And I think what it really boils down to is knowing yourself, mm-hmm. and knowing, looking back to a couple of years and thinking about who you were, you know, at a certain, like, think about a point in your life when you were really happy and you were really content, and why you were that way. And then thinking about the current path that you're on, and, you know, what it would look like if you made that decision, or if you made that life choice, you know, would it lead to that? Would it lead you in that direction? And would you be able to recreate those circumstances? Not specifically, but just that kind of that feeling, you know, that you're in the right place. And if the answer is no, you need to, you know, ask some more hard questions. And that's ultimately what it's about to me, is really, just maintaining your own personal integrity, you know, and not wavering from that set of standards, and not doing it for anyone, you know, and because the pressures are out there, and it's and they're not going to go anywhere. It's once you avoid one, or once you, you know, deal with one, there's going to be more. But the less that you compromise your own values and your own, you know, sense of purpose, the easier it is to not fall into those traps, and to really know yourself and be able to stick through that. Yeah. And it's a hard thing to give specific advice about, but it, you know, I hope that, I hope that the book will help, you know, and just see from my, cause that was tough to kind of write about, you know, really thinking about those moments, you know, not so much that they were hard to talk about, but it was just like almost, you know, I didn't want it to seem like I was avoiding responsibility or avoiding, you know, anything like, you know, that I just didn't want to do. You know, it wasn't like that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, in some ways responsibility is, I mean, it's based on the person, and when you sign up and you sign up for a commitment, and you have a responsibility toward that commitment, like the commitment we had in the Marine Corps. But I also see responsibility in your life in another way. You know, by taking on Fred, you took on responsibility. Yeah. You took on responsibility for his life, for his welfare, for his comfort, and things like that. And at the same time, if you sign up for something that is not in your will and is not something you want to do, that's kind of, you know, letting go of responsibility for yourself, just so you can get some sort of comfort, so people don't look at you like you're funny and things like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an uncomfortable decision to buck, you know, your family's going to look at you differently. Your friends are going to like, what, but you know, like it passes, and people might, you know, give you a cockeyed look or question, you know, what you're doing or what you aren't doing. But in a week, maybe less, you know, they'll get it, and they'll see, you know, that you know, you're happy and that you're content. And if they're supposed to be in your life, then that's all they want for you. And you know, it's just a matter of just maintaining, you know, being able to look inward and really, really determine what you want for yourself, and not compromising it for anybody.
Now, with the book, I know you guys you're on your tour right now. How long is this tour? Where are you guys headed? What areas are you going to?
Yeah, we were in Rhode Island last night in a town called Westerly. It was a really great event. Lots of people. They sold all the books at the store, which was really cool. And and then we have tomorrow we have an event in Cheshire at the Public Library in Cheshire, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. Really excited about that. It seems like that I usually talk for about 20 minutes and just kind of talk about the book and the journey and Fred. Everybody just wants to know about Fred. I'm used to that. You know, people are excited to see. They're excited to see me because Fred's at the other end of the leash. You know, and yep. I could be invisible and then I usually just take a lot of questions. People always want to know about Fred's, you know, habits and, you know, different stuff. And then I'll do just, you know, book signing and stuff like that. And then on Sunday, we're going to be in Middletown, Connecticut. And then, we're just headed like up to New Hampshire and then kind of all the way down the East Coast. And if people want to know just when we're coming, we're going to be in Delaware, and in Rehoboth Beach and, next week. And then we'll be in DC for Veterans Day weekend. And, but if they can just go to fredtheafghan.com and go to our events tab and you can check out all the different events. I'm really, really excited about all of them, but we have one at a place that I write about in the book a lot called the Pug. And it's just a great little local, bar in DC that I hung out a lot when we lived there. And we're going to do a fundraiser for the Veterans Writing Project and a book signing and sale, right there at the Pug. So it'd be cool for people to come if they've never been, you know, come check out the bar that I write about. That's like, you know, it's in the book and there's lots of great people that hang out there and really great characters and it's in a cool neighborhood too. And then, you know, they can get a copy of the book and have a Stroh's, which is the beer that I always drink when I'm there.
When I lived in DC, what did I drink? I used to drink Yingling, a lot of Yingling.
Yeah. It's big there. Yeah.
I drink a lot of whiskey too, but so I had to
stop. Right. That's great.
But, so you've got this book, you've got the book tour going on. Have you thought about what your next step is for you and Fred? What are you guys going to try next?
Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, I'm always thinking about that. I'm always thinking about the next step. And I think, you know, I definitely want to keep writing and my gut right now is kind of telling me like I could write a book about writing a book and just in general, like what my path was like, almost like expand off of the last chapter of Craig and Fred and really get into, you know, what those moments were like when I was really kind of put to the test in terms of my, you know, my commitment to the story and to sharing, you know, sharing everything about it. And, I mean, cause there were moments that I was like, withdrawn on my bank accounts, you know, and I didn't know where, you know, like what, you know, how I was going to get, you know, food for, you know, for Fred and just like things were just really, you know, really dark there for a little while. But I really just maintained that, you know, that positivity that was supposed to be, you know, what the story was all about, you know, and just tried to live, you know, live according to my own, story. And so I think that could be a fun thing to write and a valuable, thing to share with people. And also we just want to keep traveling, you know, and I think we're kind of tentatively putting together some ideas for the West Coast. We have a ton of friends. We'd love to come see you. And
dude, you got
to
come out here. I will cook the best Italian meal.
That's great, man.
It'll be the best Italian meal you'll get on the West Coast. I'll promise you.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. We'll take it, man. Yeah. So we want to, you know, maybe in spring, summer, like get out there and see all of our friends and do more events out there. You know, Fred loves to travel and we all, you know, my girlfriend and Fred's little sister, Ruby, you know, we're a little unit now. So, you know, we want to keep it going. And I want to share more just kind of about, you know, our travels and, you know, I'd love to just explore different towns and dog friendly establishments and, you know, almost maybe make like a YouTube channel about like dog travel and stuff like that. I think that would be really fun to do just with Fred. So yeah, we'll see. We got lots of ideas. It's just kind of a matter of putting them to the test and see how they feel.
Well, I definitely think you'll find success with any of those ideas. You guys have a lot of charisma. Both of you have a lot of charisma. So
yeah.
Don't sell yourself short there, man. You know, people want to hear what you got to say too. It's not just,
right.
you know?
Yeah, I know. I know. I've always been kind of hard to compliment. You know, I'm really, the hardest part for me about the book in general was just writing about myself, you know, and when I sent a very early version of it to my girlfriend, actually before we were dating, I just wanted her to read it because she was one of the only people I knew that was creative, and she wrote me back and said it's great, but you know, like, we want to know more about you, you know, and that was the last thing I wanted to hear, because it's always harder to write about yourself. But she was right, you know, and that was I think was where the real therapy came into it for me, was really just when you put it on a screen or when you put it on paper, it becomes real, and you can really really, you know, just continue to kind of flush your own thoughts out. So
can I ask you a little bit about your writing process? Because
of course,
talking about that, is there a particular ritual you have when you're writing? Is there a particular time of day you like to write at? Is there a particular thing you have to do before you get into it?
Yeah, I find like it was just important for me to, at some points it would be like I'd sit down and I'd write for 5 minutes and never use whatever that was again, or maybe I would, or it was almost just valuable to get the ball rolling on an idea. And sometimes I would sit down and write, and the next thing I know, my legs would be asleep, and I would have been writing, and the sun was going down, and I've been writing like for 6 hours. Oh, wow. And so I think ultimately for me, I think I would have been turned off if I had felt like I needed to have like a serious regimen. Mm-hmm. It was just about writing and just about doing it when it felt like I needed to, or like I should, or like I had something in my head that had to come out. And once I started to do that and to address that kind of, that inclination, it felt all the more natural to just like I carry around just like something like this, just like a little red notebook, you know, and if I'm just around the house or out, you know, and I just sit down and just write, like a memory would come in my head, because a lot of the book, you know, it happened a while ago, and so things would kind of hit me here and there, and I would just be like, oh, remember that time that Justin did that, you know, and that would be enough for me when I went back to my computer to sit down and kind of extrapolate and pull that and memory apart and see if there was anything kind of valuable there in terms of the story. And so I think, you know, I think it's important to write just in general, and for people, it's like working out, like what works for one person's body type and one person's, you know, kind of lifestyle might not work for somebody else. So I think especially for veterans, that we have stories. It doesn't matter if you didn't go to Afghanistan or Iraq or you know, you didn't deploy at all. And if you're turning wrenches on a helicopter in Pendleton, like, you got stories, and they're awesome and they're unique, and you know, people want to hear them. And I think, you know, just sitting down and writing is just important, and everybody's going to do it differently. And so it's just that, just kind of popping that bubble, you know, that first time. And then once you start, it's going to be something that you kind of want to do and you gravitate towards.
Do you ever read the book, The War of Art, by Pressfield?
No.
You got to check that out. He also read a lot of war books. He was a Marine as well, but he wrote this book.
Okay.
I don't have it near my desk right now, but it's called The War of Art. And he talks about resistance and how writers go through resistance, and how, because he was kind of the same, a very similar story to yours, where for a lot, I think up until about the age of 45, he was living out of a van, and he was typing a typewriter out of the back of his van. And then all of a sudden his writing kind of took off, and he talks about the mental resistance that people go through. You got to check that book out, man.
Definitely.
Make sure.
We'll
talk about that. But
that's
cool, man. I like that you have that process. Do you find that your skills from the Intel world helped you in remembering things?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because I was, you know, I wasn't a shooter, you know, I wasn't a recon guy. It was my job to really like have my eyes open, especially on the battlefield. And I think that that habit, yeah, definitely carried into my time after, you know, and my experiences after on the road with Josh and Fred, and really just like that method of when I saw something or when I talked to a villager or when I, you know, observed a Taliban tactic or, you know, something like that, I wrote it down. And so, yeah, I think that kind of carried over, but it's nothing that people, without that background can't do. 'Cause essentially it's just observing and reporting, you know, observing and remembering, you know, and just, I think the biggest hurdle to kind of get over is, you know, is that your experiences are worth sharing and yeah. worth writing down. And also, like, you can be a writer and suck at spelling and grammar. Like, it doesn't, I think people need to hear that, man, because yeah. That's why you have editors, you know? You know, and so you shouldn't feel self-conscious about, you know, like, oh, did I spell that right? Or, you know, what's a semicolon? You know, like, it doesn't, nobody cares, you know, like, it's about what's on the page. It's about the story. So, you know, all that stuff is just details and, you know, you can get hashed out later. So, yeah.
Worry about the accomplishing mission, getting it out, and then worry about crossing your T's and dotting your I's later on.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
That's a big thing. Don't be a perfectionist.
No.
Cool, man. I guess this is kind of the last question I have with this new phase in your life, right? You know, you've gone through these different phases, you know, from being in the Marine Corps the first time, you know, people find out if they read the book that you were in the Marine Corps twice, kind of career first and then another career and then you know, into college and into your travels and now as a noted author. How are you dealing with this latest phase in your life? Like, what are you learning from it? What kinds of things is it opening your eyes to?
I'm really just taking it as slowly as I can because, you know, like I said earlier, like this time last year, I was working retail and like losing sleep at night over like what I was doing with my life. And so it's proof to me of my own, you know, my own like kind of personal, philosophy, you know, and that the idea that it's not what happens to you, you know, it's how you react that matters and stubborn positivity, you know, all this stuff that I really had like through my studies at Georgetown and through my experience with Fred have really, you know, clung to, but I really had to, you know, and it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't an easy path to this. And so it really just, I want to be grateful. I want to understand where I was last year, you know, and how many people, you know, would love to have the opportunities that I do in terms of just the exposure to our story and to writing and in general. And, I really want to, you know, just be open to anything, you know, to anybody at a bookstore, at a park or at any of these events that wants to talk, like I'm going to find the energy to talk, you know, and to listen too, you know, and really just, explore anything that comes our way, because at this point, you know, like it's paying off, you know, and I can really see it, you know, I want to keep it going. I won't stop until people, I want everybody to know. I want everybody to know about Fred. I want everybody to know about Sean and Justin and just all the amazing people that have come into my life. And, you know, and I want to meet more, amazing people. I want to come to California and hang out with you and meet everybody, you know, in between. So, I think the way I'm dealing with it is just, it's just honoring the experiences that I'm lucky to have, you know, and grateful to just the world for giving me and Fred this voice.
And do you have any advice for those guys at home right now who might be stuck in that situation where they feel kind of trapped and they feel like their life's not going anywhere. Maybe they have a lot of stress. Maybe they got bills to pay and maybe they're not covering them.
Right.
What's your advice to somebody in that situation?
Yeah, it's okay to feel overwhelmed, and it's okay to acknowledge the fact that it maybe you feel like your life, you know, kind of sucks at the moment. And like, because it's not, you know, this positive philosophy that I have, and you know, the idea of it's not what happens to you, it's how you react that matters. It's not an idea that you can just ignore the negative stuff and it'll go away. You know, it's the opposite of that. You have to embrace it. You have to understand, you know, that you're not where you want to be, and really make peace with it. And the moment that you make peace with that, and really, like, you know, and you, it's not blaming anybody else. It's not even blaming yourself. It's just understanding that you're not where you want to be. Then you can start to really look for doors and windows and cracks to crawl through and find, you know, ways to get where you want to be. And I think that, you know, that it's just a matter of climbing out of that first hole, and then, you know, things are going to open up. And I think really, patience is a big part of that. And just, you know, understanding that you can have the best plan in the world, but it's never going to go down the way you want it to. And you have to be patient and open to other opportunities that you probably never saw coming. That's it's a tough place. And anybody that's having a tough time out there, it's a hard thing to, like, for me sitting, you know, on my book tour in a hotel room, like I'm sure that, you know, it's hard to hear from me. But trust me, like it was less than a year ago that I was right where you are. And I had like all the aspirations in the world, all the energy and just like, you know, just life experience that I felt was valuable that was being squandered. You know, like I'm sitting there working retail, you know, and like losing my mind, but it gets better. And it's just a matter of being persistent and patient. And those are just two really important things.
That's amazing advice. That's absolutely amazing advice. You know, I think that anybody who listens to your story, who reads your book, they're going to find out it's about a lot more than just a guy and his dog.
Yeah.
This is about life. This is about veterans. It's about all of us, because all of us face some of the situations that Craig is in. I think that, you know, if you take charge of some of those lessons and you'll learn them. You know, things like taking on responsibility for something else in your life, you know, taking on that little responsibility, what seems like a little responsibility to some people, like taking on a dog that you find, that can mean so much.
Right.
And you know, and being patient and those things. Like, such an amazing bit of information we can get from you and your life and your story and what you're doing.
Right. Now. Yeah, man. Thank you. I mean, no matter how dark it feels, like there is something to be grateful for. There is something to smile about and to be positive about. And even if you're not lucky enough to have a dog in your life, or you don't have the resources or the time, like that's okay. You know, but there are, you know, there are nice days. There are sunrises and sunsets and a cup of coffee, you know, and like, and just like a smile from a friend or a stranger, you know, like just like open yourself up to seeing something good and to being something good. And it's gonna come back at you. I promise.
Awesome. Is Fred awake? Does he want to say hi to the audience at all? Or
oh yeah, he does. Oh, he's napping, but I'm gonna grab him. He's right here. Come here, buddy. Come here, man. Come here. Oh, I'm so sorry to wake you. Oh, here he comes. Here's the man.
Look at that guy.
Hey, Fred.
He's a
hey, hi, buddy. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, he's got sleepy breath.
That is awesome.
They're going to have to bring some extra vacuums into this hotel room because he's a shedder right now.
That is awesome. How old is he right now? Do you have any idea of his age?
Yeah, I put him around like 7.5. You know, he was about 8 months when I found him, because he had all his big dog teeth, and they say they get those around the 8 month mark. And thank you. And so yeah, that was October of 2010. So maybe he was around maybe 8 or 9 months old when I found him. And so I put him around 7.5. But when he's a puppy when he wants to be, man. He's still got, you know, he's not shy about letting you know when he wants to play or when he wants to go outside. When he sees a squirrel, like it's, you know, he's never caught one, but, you know, he's all about just being a puppy, especially now that we live up in Maine. Like he's so happy. Oh, so sorry.
And for the dog owners out there, did you have to put him on like a special diet when you brought him in and kind of domesticated him or anything like that?
No, I mean, I try to just, you know, I'd make like my chicken for the week, you know, and I'd make some for him, you know, and mix it. I try to give him, you know, just as much real stuff as I could. Cause I figured out he could, I'm going to put him down. Man, he's so hot. Okay. He surprisingly has a really sensitive stomach.
Yeah.
I mean, cause he's so used to like ingesting, but it's sensitive to processed stuff. Mm-hmm. Anything that's over processed in terms of food or treats or anything. His gut doesn't really know what to do with it. I mean, he could eat a dead, you know, something off the road and it'd be fine. But if I give him something that's too, so I really had to, you know, pay attention to stuff like that. And, but in terms of a special diet, I mean, my dad had him for the first 3 months and I think he was just giving him, you know, straight up dog food. And, but he was spoiling him a lot too. And I think cooking for him and stuff. So, yeah, it was more just about his behavior and just some little hiccups in terms of just his understanding that dogs, you know, were his friends now. He didn't have to worry about anybody taking his toys or his food but we worked through it. It wasn't too hard.
Yeah, I had Dr. Dominic DiAgostino on here. He's an expert in ketosis, but he does a charity for dogs.
Oh, cool.
They take dogs who are suffering from cancer through the ketogenic diet, right?
Oh yeah.
One of the things he was talking about was the fact that a lot of dog foods, they have grains in them, and a lot of dogs, their stomachs can't get used to the grains.
Right.
So he'll put these cancer infected dogs onto the ketogenic diet and they'll recover a lot.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Grains are, you know, anything I give Fred, it doesn't have anything like that in it. Yeah. It's just like you have to scrutinize it just like you would, you know, the food that you eat every day, like really just pay attention to. And then even if it's like, we switched Fred to like more of a seafood based food because we thought it would just be like, you know, he really liked it. But it made him itchy. And you could tell he was kind of uncomfortable and we're like, whoa. So we switched back to the one we were using before. And it was even from the same brand. But you know, and once we switched him back, he stopped kind of itching at his paws and he stopped, you know, doing that. It was like, okay, you know, so even if it is something that's, you know, good in terms of a product and you know, you just have to pay attention to how they're reacting to it.
Yeah, it's just so interesting, you know, a dog coming from the desert of Afghanistan to the United States, and then it seems like, like, you know, almost like that Eddie Murphy movie, Coming to America, or something.
Yeah,
like giant culture shock.
Trading places, and yeah, right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know. My dad, I talked about when he'd be outside like washing the car or something, and he had a long lead for Fred and he would put Fred on the lead and he would just kind of catch him every once in a while, just sitting there like sifting through like all the smells, you know, and all the sounds and, you know, of the neighborhood and of life here, you know, and just my dad would just kind of look at him and smile. I think like, what does he think about grass, you know, you know, like the neighbor going by on their bike, you know, and just all these funny little things. Cause it was, for Fred, it was quick, you know, like in terms of how long, or like the transition, like he went from the battlefield to the States, like in a matter of, you know, just weeks. So yeah, it's crazy.
Well, somewhere out there, if there's a movie producer listening, this whole thing's got to be made into a movie. I think,
yeah,
blow anything out of the water. It needs to go on the screen.
Yeah, that would be incredible.
Yeah, and you got to get Craig and Fred to play themselves. Like, you can't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Good luck finding another Fred. I don't know how many Freds are kicking around out there. Yeah.
Absolutely. Craig, is there anything else you want to get out to the audience before we head out? If you guys haven't listened to the title of this book, Craig and Fred, a Marine, a stray dog, and how they rescued each other. We're going to have the links to the book up on the show notes so that if you guys want it, you can get it. Wouldn't you want this book? I mean, it's like I said, the best book I've read this year. But Craig, is there anything else you want to get out to the audience right now?
Yeah, no, man, I'm so grateful to be, you know, on your podcast, and I'm a big fan of yours, and this whole thing that you're doing is just really important and really, really awesome. And I really appreciate the opportunity. And I guess if there's one other thing about the book, there is a young reader edition too that we did, and it's a totally different book. It's for ages 8 and up, and it's a little watered down in terms of the cursing and some of the other content, but all the important stuff is there. It's a little more readable too, because it actually goes chapter by chapter chronologically, whereas the adult one chapter is Afghanistan, one chapter's, you know, back in the States. It kind of goes back and forth. But parents of Marines and veterans that are reading the adult while their kid reads the young reader, and just how important, like guys and girls that haven't known how to bring up some of the circumstances that they faced over there, you know, and the book is bringing them, you know, to kind of like a conversational approach, you know, through this story. And that means everything to me, you know, because that's so important that we can talk to the ones we love about this stuff. And so, you know, I just want to remind people that there is, you know, if you have young kids, you know, ages 8 and up, then you can read alongside with them. And that, to me is really a really cool and unique thing about our story. So that's the only other kind of plug that we have. And also just follow us on social media, Fred the Afghan. You know, I have a lot of fun with Instagram and Facebook, and I love just taking pictures of Fred, and my photography skills aren't always great, but we try to have fun with it. So
I think it's a great Instagram that you got there. It's really interesting seeing a dog who's you know, 3 feet long and 1.5 feet tall, you know, try to fetch a stick and all this stuff like that. He's actually really athletic,
right? Yeah, he is.
Cool, man. Well, first off, Craig, I want to thank you for your service to this country. I want to also thank you for your story, because I really do think that this story is going to help a lot of our brothers and sisters out, and it's going to help a lot of people out. If you read this story, you can't come away with it without having a positive mindset. And that's one of the things you'll get from this. There is ugliness in this world. There is horrible things, horrible people, immense evil, but there's also beauty. There's also awesome dogs. There's also awesome people. And that's what you have to remember. You got to remember what you're fighting for and why right now, even after your service, you're still in the fight. So Craig,
that's right.
Craig, thank you so much for coming on. And
yeah, man. Thank you.
Each and every one of you out there, I want you to get out there, and I want you to live your best life.